Hi, I'm Moji Alawodeyau from the Feminist Buzzkills Live Pod, the only podcast that helps you navigate the news in this post-pro anti-abortion hellscape. Each week, with co-host Liz Winstead, we dissect all the news from that sketchy intersection of abortion and misogyny with providers and activists working on the ground. The cherry on top is we have amazing comedy guests who help us laugh through the rage. Feminist Buzzkills Live drops Fridays wherever you pod. Listen and subscribe, because when BS is popping, we pop off.
Welcome to Rainy Day Rabbit Holes, where we take the history of the West off the rails.
If you like your history unhinged, you are in the right place.
I'm Shay.
And I'm Jody.
Let's fall down the rabbit hole.
The Arizona High Country doesn't get the credit it deserves for being haunting. People think desert, flat, hot, dry. But if you climb north towards the Mogollon Rim, everything changes. The air sharpens. The trees get tall, really tall. Towering ponderosa pines blanket the slopes like a dark army. The wind whispers through them in a way that makes your skin crawl, like it knows something that you don't. This is the land of ancient creatures and old stories. The Mogollon Monster, the goat people, strange lights that dance across the sky and vanish the moment you try to look straight at them. Locals will tell you the woods up here have eyes, and maybe they're right. It was here, near the small town of Snowflake, Arizona, on the edge of the Sitgreaves National Forest, that something unexplainable happened in November of 1975.
Dun, dun, dun. Wow.
That's
Jody,
right.
Jody's voice is very deep right now.
I'm not done with my intro.
Oh, crap. Sorry.
Back. This is not just a UFO story. It's a story about belief and betrayal, about fame and fear, and about how one night in the forest can alter the course of your life forever. So strap in, because we're heading straight into one of the most enduring and most debated alien abduction cases in modern American history. This is the Travis Walton incident. And depending on who you ask, it really happened.
Dun, dun, dun. I'm so excited for this. Yes.
Do you see why I was asking to try to find fire in the sky all weekend?
Sweet. I'm excited.
Welcome back, rabbit holers. Today, I'm over the moon, excited to be joined by my big brother, the one, the only, the incredibly stinky, Jason.
Yeah, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
The one, the only, the incredibly stinky. Yeah,
that's you.
Sure. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's on my business cards. What are you going to do?
Well, today is also extra special because Jason and I are looking at each other during.
Oh, that's frightening.
I'm currently sitting in my brother's living room in Phoenix, Arizona, my birth state. And Jason and I just got back from a little road trip down to Tucson where we visited breweries, the Titan Missile Museum, learned about limestone caves at the Kirchner Caverns, and got into the Old West spirit in Tombstone. We saw the haunted Bluebird Theater, checked out the infamous OK Corral, and did, you know, general Arizona things.
The Bluebird Theater? Was sure it's not the Birdcage Theater?
Oh, Jesus. I wrote Bluebird.
You want to try that one again?
We saw the haunted Birdcage Theater.
There you go. Okay. Birdcage Theater. Bullet holes and all.
Bullet holes and all. Checked out the infamous OK Corral and did general Arizona things.
That's correct.
I complained about the heat a lot.
I did not, because I live here and it's nice right now.
Now, I had originally intended to bring you an episode from Tombstone, but since we are in the middle of our yearly celebration of the Men in Black and the Maury Island incident, I thought that I would bring you one of the most famous and most hotly debated alien abduction incidents in recent history. And Jason, are you familiar with the Travis Walton incident?
Very vaguely, but, you know, always looking to deepen my knowledge about rando cryptid things.
Sure. What's...
Alien things. Sorry. My apologies to the crypto heads out there.
I know. They're like, no, big separation. Aliens and cryptids,
that's
not
right.
The same.
And crypto-fascists, something totally different.
Crypto-fascists. Is that somebody who likes cryptocurrency?
I don't know. Maybe.
And who's also a fascist?
Crypto heads, crypto-fascists.
Isn't that most of them? So. Sorry, listeners, if you invest in crypto.
No, it's a good thing.
Cryptocurrency.
But, you know, wish I had years ago, much like the pizza dude who paid for a pizza with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice that you can invest in an imaginary thing and make money from it.
Well, you know, fiat currency, what are you going to do?
So, Jason, have you seen the movie inspired by the Travis Walton incident?
I have, but it's been many, many years ago.
Do you remember anything about it?
I remember vaguely pickup truck and dudes out in the woods. And,
right.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah. There was an alien scene in there that I probably have tried to block out because it's creepy.
Yeah. The alien abduction scene on board is fairly gruesome.
Yes.
I saw Fire in the Sky as a teenager for the first time. And while I don't remember much about it, it did leave a pretty substantial impression on me over the years. It's basically what caused me to be terrified of aliens, even though I don't believe in them. I'm still terrified of them.
You're still terrified.
I mean, I can watch a horror movie and then still want to leave all the lights on, even though great. I know it was not true.
It's probably why I get nervous when I go to the dentist for some weird reason. So,
oh, because of like
all the stuff coming right.
Right. All the needles. Yeah. Yeah, there's a scene where there's these like square shaped fingerprints on the window that are like dripping. And that always creeped me out. Like, why would they have square fingertips? That's very creepy. And yeah, there was a lot of implied and some shown body horror, like needles going towards eyes and into bellies. And yeah, it was weird. Anyway, well, Jason and dear listeners, I'm taking us back to a place we've been before.
Oh, no.
If okay. you remember episode 71, where Jody told us the tale of the Mogollon Monster.
Dun, dun, dun.
And the prospector that was most likely having sex with goats.
Oh, that's right. The goat man.
While, while being high on turpentine and cough syrup.
You know, that's my favorite cocktail. Turpentine, laudanum. Yep. What would you call that? What would you name that as a cocktail?
Oh, shoot. Yeah.
A turpin cough, a coffin time.
Well, the prospector was Zeke, and this all came from his head, so it's the Zeke's head cocktail.
Zeke's head. I'll take a Zeke's head, please. Sorry, we don't have turpentine at this bar.
I'm so sorry. We ran out of turpentine a couple hours ago. Are you okay with kerosene?
Oh, that's squeeze and, you know, that orange juice.
So that all took place on the Mogollon Rem. Remember the hairy enigma?
Yes. Well, I've got my own hairy enigma. Thank you very much. Don't need to hear about anybody else's.
Does it have creatures in it?
Nope.
Does that sound like
not.
Crabs?
No, it does not. It is clean. It's less of an enigma, I guess.
Well, it cuts across the northern half of Arizona.
Yes, it does.
And extends about 200 large? Miles. Wow, Jason.
Have my dicks people call your dicks people. We'll talk. So we'll do lunch.
So this area is pretty remote. With
Wait, crap. This is going on the radio. That's going to all get cut.
No, they're pretty low-key. So this area is pretty remote with dense ponderosa pine forests, lonely dirt roads, and elevations of over 7,000 square feet. No, not square feet.
Square feet. 7,000 square feet.
And elevations of over 7,000 feet. I can't write 7,000 feet because of my job. Everything has to be square feet. I can't just write feet by itself. It's the kind of place where any strange thing could happen. And there's no one to hear you scream.
I'm going to give you a hint. Next time you just have to rewrite feet by itself, just summon your inner Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, gosh.
Just feet. All feet, just feet. All the time.
That sounds like it's going to be turned into an experience.
Just feet. Oh, you know, it might be. Maybe it's the new park at Disneyland. Oh, just feet.
Gross.
Ooh, that would be rough.
Have to hose it down.
Yeah, no. Ooh, I don't like that. All right, off the feet.
So anyway, let's talk a bit about Travis Walton, the centerpiece of our tale today.
Did he like feet?
I mean, could be. Travis was born in 1953, and he got up to no good pretty early on. When he was just 18, he got caught breaking into the offices of the Western Molding Company, stealing checks, which then he would forge and cash. He was eventually had the charges dropped, and it was expunged from his record. But yeah, he was only 18 when he first started doing crimes. Anyway, in 1975, when he was just 22 years old, he got a job working for a friend's older brother, Mike Roger, who...
Watch out for older brother.
They are trouble.
Yes, they are.
The friend's older brother, Mike Roger, eventually became his brother-in-law.
Okay.
The year before, Mike had won a contract with the Forestry Service to thin out small trees from an area called Turkey Springs in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest. Mike had underbid two other contractors to win this bid. Now, Jason and I are familiar with some of the workings of federal bids, as our dad did federal contract work for the Corps of Engineers. That's right, the Corps. Dying on this mountain, Jason.
Yes, I know.
Say it like you spell it.
The corpse of engineers.
The corpse of engineers.
This country was built on the corpse of engineers. That's why there's so many ghost stories.
I mean, the
they're all engineers.
The corpse of engineers is turning into a corpse. Thank you, federal funding. So. Thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama.
Anyway, you have to be pretty good at putting together these bids. If you miscalculate, it can end up costing you a ton of money, especially for these small mom and pop type contractors. It's a complicated dance of trying to build in enough profit while being the lowest bidder. And if you underbid by too much, you find yourself scraping by to try to get the job done on budget and you have to cut corners. And even worse, if you don't deliver the job in time, you are subject to fines and even blacklisting, where you can't
bid on projects for a certain amount of time.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this was the 1970s. You had to try. Things were not great in America after the Vietnam War. Americans were disillusioned and cynical about the government's handling of the war. Inflation was skyrocketing between 9 and 12%. Unemployment was at a crazy high of 9%. Mortgage interest rates rose to 20%. You guys think that the 6.5% that we have right now is bad? Imagine 20%.
That's a little rough.
Yeah. Things were bad. Of course, back then you could buy a house for $50,000 or less. So, you know, a little different. But still. And in rural areas, people were desperate to do anything to make a living.
Including feet stuff?
I mean, but it had to be advertised in the newspaper because remember, pre-internet.
Well, I don't know. That might be kind of interesting. Just a picture of a foot. I guess you kind of lose, you know, there's nothing. That's all it takes for some people. Just
well, yeah, if you put the picture in the newspaper, then they wouldn't need to contact you for more pictures of... I mean, let's say one of pictures like special, like maybe you just take a picture of like the little toe.
Oh, there you go.
Want to see more?
Want to see more? Call.
What's her number?
8675309.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah. Maybe a little bit of a, you know, half of a calf or something like that. A little bit of a shin. Ooh.
Ooh. Look at those ankles.
Look at them ankles. Look at them. I bet the goat man could really get some business out of that. So.
I don't know. Still, if he had goat hindquarters.
Oh, that's right. He's got the digicrade.
But somehow he had claws, too. Remember, he was leaving marks on trees. So he had hooves and claws.
Wow, hooves and claws.
And apparently knew how to make a baby somehow.
Well, I mean, that's pretty instinctual. God. Shay, dude, I need to explain the birds and the bees to you.
No, I'm just wondering, like, are we goat genitalia down? I guess most people's genitalia are between their legs, but I'm not going to make the assumption that everybody keeps their genitals in the same place. Yeah. I mean, if you've watched Star Trek.
That's right. Thanks, Captain Kirk.
So the 1970s also saw a spike in interest in UFO phenomena. Remember, 1975 was the quote-unquote year of intelligence in the U.S. due to widespread public and congressional scrutiny of intelligence agencies, particularly the CIA, NSA, and FBI.
Ooh, alphabet soup. Always my favorite.
Yeah, especially following the Watergate scandal. The CIA and Air Force were actively engaged in investigating UFO sightings. There were numerous UFO sightings near nuclear missile silos and launch control centers in Montana, North Dakota, and Wyoming, including Maelstrom Air Force Base.
Investigating or causing the sightings?
Yeah, exactly. That's my thought, too.
So that brings up a question we didn't ask at the Titan Missile Museum, is if they ever saw UFOs around any of the missile silos that are based outside of Tucson, Arizona. Not that far outside, I will have you admit. That's a half an hour drive outside of Tucson.
We're going to have to Google this.
Yep. Half an hour, 18 silos that could destroy the earth.
Well, I mean, the public didn't know about these bases until the 80s.
That's
so
true. 24 years.
They wouldn't have known in the 70s. So it would have been probably classified if there had been any sort of UFO sighting around them.
I wonder if that's part of the reason for the sightings.
Think
about that for a little bit, listeners.
There was a significant increase of reported incidents in late October and early November of 1975 around multiple Air Force bases. And the declassification of Project Blue Book, the Air Force's investigation into UFOs, began in 1975. Anyway, all of this to say, the 1970s were a weird time.
All you have to do is look at like the panel vans and the pants.
And here we have some hungry young men in the middle of nowhere, Arizona, who needed money and excitement in their lives. And boy, did they get it. At least the excitement.
You know, that hasn't changed. I could use some money and excitement in my life.
Yes, but you're not in the middle of nowhere, Arizona.
That's true.
You're in the middle of everywhere, Arizona, because Phoenix is freaking huge.
That is also true.
But before we get deeper into this maybe true, maybe not story, let's get our memory wiping pens and clear our minds for some ads.
Oh, awesome ads.
Welcome back. And
wait,
if you
what were we talking about? I couldn't remember.
If you want more conspiracy, more weirdness, plus ad-free episodes and bonus episodes, consider supporting our show through Patreon. You can become a monthly supporter at the $5, $10, or $20 tier, or you can just do a one-time donation to get a bonus episode. Think of it as buying us a cup of coffee. We can't do this without your generous support. And thank you to all of our supporters. You are the best.
Okay. The best.
Back to the story.
Back to the story.
So here we are. It's 1975. A young Travis was working on the Apache Sitgreaves Forest with Mike Rogers and five other men. So there were seven-man crew total. The Turkey Springs job called for the thinning of 1,277 acres of forest to be completed by 1975.
Was that acres or square acres?
Square acres.
So, wow, and actually it was really good. You did 5 + 2 and you got 7. That's some good math for you, Shay.
But what? What's the, where'd the 5 come from?
And the 2? Five men and the other 2. Oh. So that was for some very good math.
Why, thank you.
Excellent job.
So anyway, this job was supposed to originally be completed by August of 1975. And it was tough work, although it was Arizona. And up in the mountains, it got really cold. Temps at night could dip as low as 8 degrees Fahrenheit.
That's one of the things people don't really understand about Arizona. They think it's just all cactus and desert. We have high desert.
And scorpions.
Well, there is that. We have high desert that will get brutally, brutally cold during the winter. And we can get up in Flag and other places around the state massive amounts of snowfall.
Yep.
This year included. Thanks, Obama.
Thanks, Obama. They were supposed to be done by August of 1975, but they were not. So Mike Rogers had to get an extension. That was until November. After a long day of hard work, on Wednesday, November 5th, 1975, Travis and the 6 men of his crew were piled into a truck heading home. Today had been a little odd. Travis didn't even work that day. He said he was going to sleep his hangover off in the truck. And Mike Rogers, the crew foreman, even disappeared for a couple of hours. And typically, they would knock off work by 4 p.m. before dark, but today Mike made them stay late after dusk. The men were tired and grumpy as they drove through the dark woods. Also, why was Mike going this way? It wasn't the typical way they would head out of the forest. All of a sudden, a brilliant light shone through the trees. As they got closer, they could see that the bright light was shining down from a silver craft hovering over the ground. Travis was so excited that he jumped out of the truck before it could even come to a complete stop. As he approached it, a vibrant bluish-green beam of light shot out of the bottom of the object, striking Travis and sending him flying backwards. Panicking, Mike threw the truck into reverse and got the hell out of there.
Yeah, light usually doesn't do that. It's kind of surprising.
Yeah. But once they were out of sight of the object, they came to their senses and realized that they had left Travis just lying there in the road.
Nice, guys.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks. Appreciate that.
They went back, not knowing what to expect. To their dismay, Travis was gone. They got out of the truck, calling for him, wandering through the dark woods on either side of the road. The night was getting really cold, and after about 20 minutes of fruitless searching, they drove down into the town to tell the local sheriff of what had happened.
Wait a minute. Number one, if those dudes left me, I'd be like, yeah, screw you guys as well. And 20 minutes doesn't seem like that long to search for somebody.
No.
You'd be searching for like half an hour to an hour looking for that dude. I
mean, yeah, you just saw this weird thing. He's missing.
Yeah.
20 minutes and you're like,
you're either going to leave, peace out, because there's a weird thing happening and be like, sorry, bro. Or you're going to be like, crap, we got to find this guy. We're going to search for like the next hour or two.
Yeah, you would think.
You would think.
Well, so they drove back down into town to tell the local sheriff what happened.
How long did the drive into town take?
You know, I'm not sure about that one.
Okay, fair enough.
Yes, a flying saucer took Travis. The sheriff, Mike Rogers, and 2 of the crew members went back to the area that they saw the craft and searched until after midnight.
Did the flying saucer have the word Coors or Bud Light on right. the side? I'm just kind of curious, you know.
Or a big green leaf.
Or maybe a big green leaf of some sort.
So
5 points on it? I don't know, maybe.
They searched until after midnight and still no sign of Travis. So the deputy sheriff, Kenneth Copeland, and Mike drove over to Travis's mom's house about 1:30 a.m. this morning.
I mean, that's classic Travis, you know.
His mom was strikingly calm as she absorbed the news that Travis was missing.
Like I said, classic Travis.
Classic Travis. They drove her back to town to call the rest of the family as she didn't have a phone. And the entire family took this news with pretty amazing calmness.
Maybe they just didn't like him. They were like, Thank God, he's gone.
Don't keep the relief on your face. Don't let it show on your face.
Maybe he's heading to Mexico.
The next day, the missing person investigation began in earnest. A search party of 50 people scoured the Turkey Springs area, but still no sign of Travis. They brought in scent dogs and helicopters and combed the forest for 5 days.
Scent dogs, are those dogs that like smell nice or, you know?
All dogs smell nice.
They're just, I disagree, but, you know, maybe they were like, you know, aromatherapy dogs.
Oh, there you go. They brought their essential oils.
That's right.
Maybe some crystals.
Bringing my essential oils over. This is my essential oils and crystals dog. So service animals, you know.
This was the largest missing person search in Arizona history up to this point. But Travis's mom wasn't worried. After about 5 hours into the search, she said, "I don't think there is any use of looking any further. He's not around here."
Yeah, I'm going to guess they didn't like Travis. This is my guess. Call me crazy, but they were just like, classic Travis, but yeah, don't worry about it. He'll be all right.
Right. She said, "I don't think he's on this earth."
Okay, why would she say that?
Yeah, well, we'll get into it. Mm. The search was called off for the day, but started up again the next day. The search continued on November 9th as well, but again, Travis's mother called it off. She said it was pointless. So Travis's mom didn't think that they should be searching for him at all. Interesting.
Travis's mom did not like him.
Right. With no sign of Travis and no clues about what happened to him, rumors started to circulate. Maybe one of the other crew members got into an argument with Travis and murdered him, and the others are covering it up. Within a few days, all 6 crew members were accused of murder, but they stuck to their story. A UFO took Travis. They even took polygraph tests. They were asked if they had harmed Travis and if they saw a strange object. 5 of the 6 men passed, and the 6th was inconclusive. Okay. What do you think about that?
I mean, we all know that polygraphs are not even close to being admissible.
No, they're not admissible in court, but...
No, and we also know that they're not. They're easily manipulated and fooled if you know what you're doing. However, that's kind of interesting in the 70s. I mean, that's kind of common knowledge now, but in the 70s, polygraphs were considered like the thing. So,
right.
You know, that's kind of an interesting take on. They were just like, yeah, we didn't hurt him. Who was the 6th man who was inconclusive? That's what I want to know.
I don't remember his name. Honestly, I didn't put down.
So
the
it wasn't, it wasn't the foreman. It wasn't his.
No,
buddy.
It wasn't the foreman. It was one of the other side characters.
Okay.
Who have no names.
One of the NPCs.
Yes, exactly. In this story, they are. But just after midnight on Monday, November 12th, Travis came back.
Classic Travis.
According to his story, he regained consciousness lying face down on the side of the road. As he struggled back to awareness, he saw a metallic object with a mirror-like finish flying away from him. He walked to the little town of Herber, where he used a gas station phone booth to call his sister Colette. The operator who placed the call recognized his name and alerted the sheriff. Oh, and for the kids out there... A collect call is when you use this thing called a landline to call someone, but the person you're calling has to pay for it, like in prison.
For the kids out there, we used to have phones on the side of the road.
Yes, it's called a phone booth.
You didn't even have to carry them around in your pocket. You just randomly wandered over there, threw a dime in.
And you had to tell this person called an operator. That's a person who works for the phone company and actually places calls for you, who you are. And then they ring the number, they tell the person who answers who is calling, and then that person has to agree to take the charges. That's very confusing.
No, I don't know about that.
To children today,
to
yes.
Children today, the idea of a phone that is not in your pocket is definitely odd.
I don't think any of our listeners are younger than the age of 30, so I think they'll figure it out.
Well, we need to fix that.
We mostly have Gen Xers.
So we need more younger listeners.
No, we need more Gen Xers.
Okay, we need more Gen Xers as well.
Our tribe.
So
anyway, instead of taking Travis to a hospital, his brother Dwayne called in a UFO researcher who he had met a couple days earlier, like you do.
Strange. Like, they didn't even go to a bar first. They went to the UFO researcher. Now, that's sus on its own.
Right.
So, that sus is for our younger listeners as well. That's suspect for the older listeners.
Oh, thank you. I was a little bit confused.
Yeah. So, that's a little bit suspect that they didn't go immediately to a bar. So they went to the UFO research.
I mean, they might have gone to the bar and it just wasn't part of the story.
Oh, possibly. That's where they met the UFO researcher. Probably. So, well, I mean, but that, it actually does make sense because they saw, if they actually did see something in the sky, like it was a UFO, then I probably would do the same thing. I'd be like, okay, are you okay? Then we're going to go to the UFO researcher before we even go to the hospital. That way there's no like contamination of evidence. We can just talk to the UFO researcher right away.
Why is the UFO researcher an expert in anything? He's not.
I mean, they're not.
Travis was missing for 5 days in the forest where temperatures reach 8 degrees Fahrenheit at night.
Yeah.
You would be like, you need to go to a hospital. You're probably dehydrated. Have you eaten? Where have you been?
No, you're all. You need to go to the bar, have some fries or
beer
chippies.
Beer does
and some
hydrate
beers.
You better than
exactly.
water.
That's correct. You know, it's got electrolytes and salts and good stuff in it. Especially if it's water beer like Bud Light.
Well, that's all they had in the 70s.
No, that's...
You had three beers and both of them were Bud.
Bud Light and Coors.
So at this point, UFO interest groups and the press had gotten a hold of the story. And people had been clamoring for interviews with the family while Travis was missing. This UFO researcher referred Dwayne to a hypnotherapist, a doctor, I'm doing air quotes, Lester Stewart. But upon seeing Travis... The guy was like, he needs a medical examination and lab tests. So.
Okay, that makes sense.
He also noted that Travis had a small lesion on the inside of his elbow, similar to someone who used intravenous drugs, and was very confused, similar to drug addicts that he had treated. But again, instead of going to the hospital, the UFO researchers arranged for a house call with two medical doctors who were also amateur UFO investigators.
Two medical doctors who also happen to deal heroin on the side.
Jason's doing air quotes here.
Doctors. Doctor referrals.
According to these doctors, Travis was severely dehydrated, had 5 days of beard growth, and had apparently lost 12 pounds.
I thought you said beer growth. And beer I was growth. Like, what's beer growth? It's like when you drink a lot, you get a little bit of a beer belly. That's me right now. Beer growth.
So how would you know you had lost 12 pounds? Did you weigh yourself right before?
Well, I mean,
you got abducted?
If you've got like if you weigh yourself on a regular basis, you kind of know what your average is.
Sure, that's true.
Yeah.
So it wasn't until November 13th that Travis's family finally let the sheriff know that Travis was back.
So how many days is that?
The next day.
Oh. Okay.
But they brought in all the UFO researchers and these other doctors before they told law enforcement, which had just spent a ton of resources searching for him.
But I thought that the operator let the sheriff know what was happening.
Yeah, it's a little bit confusing.
So the sheriff was just like, yeah, whatever, classic Travis.
So Sheriff Gillespie drove the 4 hours to the family ranch, and Dwayne and Travis demanded that the interview not be recorded. So here's Travis's version of what happened to him.
That's interesting. They did not want to record the interview.
Yeah.
I'd be like, I'm the sheriff. We're recording this. Sorry, this is what you get. There it is. You can record that.
Now, Travis didn't have a whole lot of details to give at first. So most of his recollection was revealed during regression hypnosis therapy after the event. You know, highly reliable regression hypnosis therapy, like Michelle remembers, totally legit. He doesn't remember how he got on the ship. He doesn't even remember the blue light. All he knows is that he became conscious inside a strange craft. He could see out of the windows and there were unfamiliar stars all around because everybody can look up at the sky and know exactly where they are.
Yeah,
at all times.
Exactly. Did the inside of this craft happen to have bar stools? Just kind of curious.
He thought he was in a hospital until he saw strange alien beings all around. They looked almost human, but they were completely hairless. Like no eyebrows, no eyelashes, no cats on their laps, which would make them hairy.
That's what's happening right now.
They were very white as well.
And they were very white today. What are you talking about? Doesn't mean anything.
And they were wearing reddish brown coveralls. There was something over his chest holding him down, and he was in a lot of pain. Panicking, he jumped up, although I thought there was something holding him down.
Does he have a cat? Because that could explain
yes.
Was there a cat involved because of that? on his chest, lots of pain, holding him down.
So panicking, he jumped up and grabbed the first thing he could to defend himself. He didn't say what it was. He waved whatever it was around, and the three aliens left the room.
Was it a beer bottle?
So then he just started to wander around. So now he just had like free reign of the ship, I guess. Oh,
that'd be sweet. Let me see if I can drive this puppy.
Where's the bridge? I've seen Star Trek at this point.
At least when I sit in that captain's chair. Come on.
He found himself in what looked like a planetarium. Then two human-looking beings in blue jumpsuits grabbed him and transported him to another craft where a mask was placed over his face and he blacked out. And that's basically it until he regained consciousness on the side of the road on the 12th.
So was he dressed when he was wandering around?
Yeah, I think so. Nothing said about him not having any clothes on.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So he just like woke up and threw a mask on his face.
Maybe it was in another source that I wasn't reading.
Okay. I wonder what the blue jumpsuit people did. They like just grab him, hold him down, and then throw a mask on him and knock him out?
Painting, I guess, the interior like you do in a blue jumpsuit.
Yeah, you know, blue jumpsuit apparatus.
They were working on the engine. So on November 14th, Travis and his brother Dwayne moved into a suite at the Sheraton Inn in Scottsdale, paid for by the National Enquirer in exchange for the exclusive rights to his story.
I'd move into a suite in a hotel in Scottsdale for exclusive rights to pictures of my feet. I don't know. What are you going to do? Or my cat.
He was supposed to have a polygraph test with the police that day, but he skipped it. Instead, in the presence of Enquirer reporters, a doctor who was part of a UFO group, quote unquote doctor, had a 2-hour conversation with Travis while he underwent hypnotic regression. And this is where the details of his story, quote unquote, come out.
So is this hypnotic regression number two?
No, this is the one that brings out these stories.
They did all this stuff. They left Snowflake where they were. They drove the 2 hours south to Scottsdale.
So there was the first, when he got back, they wanted to take him immediately to hypnosis, the hypnotherapist. And he said, no, he needs medical examination. So I'm assuming, because they had said that the guy took one look at him and said he needed to get a medical examination. So I'm assuming these UFO people had flown into town.
That's really interesting because I've got some issues with this, knowing Arizona. Like, it was a 4-hour drive to the ranch.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's, it's out there. That's driving from Tucson to Flagstaff, basically.
Yeah.
That is over halfway across the state.
Right.
So I don't understand where their ranch was at, where it was a 4-hour drive out to the, or is it 4-hour drive round trip? Yeah, that's getting, things are not adding up.
So the family, I'm not sure. Maybe it was a 4-hour round trip and they were like, because it was the family ranch that, family I don't ranch. Know.
Interesting.
There's a lot of like, there's not a whole lot of great details about all of this little stuff. Okay.
Until we hit the
Until
Enquirer.
It's convenient.
Okay, gotcha.
But yeah, okay, so the two doctors come in and perform a quote unquote medical examination on him where they say they're dehydrated. The next day they tell the sheriff drives out to interview them. And then the day after that, they go to Phoenix.
So they go to Scottsdale, just outside of Phoenix.
Yeah. Because at this point, the National Enquirer was wanting their story. And this is 2 days after he returned, by the way.
How did the National Enquirer find out about this? National Enquirer, because bastion of news
when
and
he
accuracy
went missing,
and bad boy.
The story of the abduction and what the men had gotten out. So the press had a hold of it.
Oh, that's right. Okay, you said that.
And the Walton family were obsessed with UFOs. So they probably called the National Enquirer immediately. And I'll tell you more about that later. We'll get to that later.
All right, cool. I'm in. I'm in for that.
Okay.
Wait, so it just occurs to me, the Waltons, like the Waltons from Little House on the Prairie.
Or like Walmart. There's a lot of Waltons. Okay. That doesn't really help.
Walton Goggins.
Walton Goggins, no. Don't be smirch Walton Goggins.
Walton Goggins goggles.
National,
check them out.
National treasure Walton Goggins. Walton Goggins.
That's right. National five-head owner, Walton Goggins.
Giant teeth owner.
I love it.
Rubik's Cube for teeth, man.
Yeah, he's awesome.
So this...
Don't besmirch Walton Goggins, Jay.
His teeth are huge.
Yeah, they're amazing.
They shine with their own inner light. So this doctor who was part of a UF, UFO group.
UFO group.
There are UFO groups.
I bet you there is. There's some weird things that happen out there.
Hey, don't UFO yuck anybody's
group is one of them, but you know, you do you. I'm all right.
There's people that want to be probed. Thank you very much. So I had this 2-hour conversation with Travis while he underwent hypnotic regression. The next day, the UFO group and the Inquirer arranged a polygraph with a freelance polygraph examiner. Now, this polygraph examiner determined that Travis was engaged in gross deception and had been trying to beat the machine by holding his breath.
Ooh, interesting. How do you get a job as a freelance polygraph
examiner? You got a machine?
That's crazy.
Will travel.
You have machine, will travel. But then that's kind of awesome because then you're totally unbiased. As long as you get paid, you're just like, yeah, payment. You pay me before I give you the results, period.
Right.
And then you're very like, you're very non-biased, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Your cat's being so dramatic about not being able to go outside.
He's being very dramatic about not being involved in this conversation.
So Travis began to make the media circuit, being interviewed by TV stations and radio stations about his alleged incident. The National Enquirer awarded Travis and his coworkers $5,000 for the best UFO case of the year, stating that they had passed the polygraph tests. They conveniently covered up the
freelance,
the one that was negative.
Gotcha. The gross misdeception one.
Yes, the gross deception one.
Yeah.
In 1978, Travis wrote a book titled The Walton Experience about the incident. And then in 1993, the book became the inspiration for the movie Fire in the Sky.
The Walton Experience, dating Walton Goggins.
It was starring Robert Patrick as Mike Rogers and D.B. Sweeney as Travis.
D.B. Sweeney?
Yep.
Like the guy that jumped out of the plane?
No.
Oh, that's D.B. Cooper. Sorry.
Yeah, that's D.B. Cooper. You know, when I was writing this, I wrote D.B. Cooper
first. Did you
first,
really?
I'm
not surprised.
Shoot, I got to back that up. Travis even made a cameo in the film. Now, Paramount Pictures decided that Travis's account was, quote, too fuzzy and too similar to other televised close encounters, unquote. So they had the screenwriter make the story flashier and more provocative.
Wait, so had Close Encounters of the Third Kind come out by this time?
When did that come out?
Let's do a little.
Well, I mean, by the time of Fire in the Sky, but you're talking about the time of the
story,
of the alleged incident.
Yeah, you know, let's see.
No, I think that was like 77.
Holy crap, Shay. Well done.
Did I get it right?
77, yeah.
Jeez, I did not actually know that.
And this happened when?
75.
Yeah, so this came out earlier. Or I'm sorry, this happened earlier. So they didn't have Close Encounters yet. So interesting. All right, good.
The same day that the film opened, Travis and Mike appeared on Larry King.
Who is an alien.
Is, yes. Yeah. You never see him below the waist.
You don't. And his hands always move. If one hand moves by itself, that's fine. Either hand. But if both hands are in vision, they move the same way. Like they're connected. It's creepy.
It's like he's an alien puppeting a human upper body.
How many heart attacks did he have? And wives did he have? I mean, you do never see him below the waist.
Let's look into this. Uh-huh. Yeah, doesn't he like to wear suspenders?
He does.
That's just to hold up.
Hold up the tentacles.
The tentacles.
Yeah.
Since the incident.
Larry King, talk show host, Elder God.
Somebody draw that, please.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
Since the incident, Travis has made a career out of his experience.
Don't make me go on the internet and search for Larry King from the waist down. That's just not a good search on your search history at all. It's just, that's bad. Don't make me do it. Don't make me do it, audience.
Sam, you're making it sound like you want to put that into your search history.
No, I just want to get the results from it. I just don't want to have the search on my history.
I already made our listeners look up where is an octopus's butthole.
Well, it might be connected to the same sort of search. Larry King from the waist down.
If you could find Larry King from the waist down, we might have solved the problem where an octopus's butthole is all in the same search.
We might have solved lots of problems.
So Travis has made sort of a career out of his experience.
Classic
he
Travis.
Regularly appears at UFO festivals like the McMinimins UFO Festival at Hotel Oregon in McMinnville, Oregon.
Sweet.
Conventions and podcasts, including
What? Rainy day rabbit holes.
I mean, I'd have him on.
Without a doubt, you'd have to. Ask him about Larry King if you do, please.
I absolutely will. Did you get a look at what's going on below the waist? That makes it sound like he was checking out his junk.
Well, you know, you do what you do when you're bored.
What podcast do you think that Travis Walton may have spent 3 hours on?
Oh, dude, it's got to be Coast to Coast, man.
No, podcast.
Oh, podcast.
Someone who's
it's got to be Joe Rogan, garbage. Without a doubt. So yeah, it's Joe Rogan. No, but was he on the Coast to Coast guy? Gosh, I should know this. The whole reason why we have podcasts about cryptids is this guy.
It's right there at the tip of my brain. Jason's gonna look it up. Art Bell.
Art Bell, Diragoa.
It came out of me right when you started looking at it.
Is the latest one. He followed Art Bell's retirement. Art Bell, dude, that kept me going on some long drives through Nevada in the middle of the night.
Well, Travis Walton also could keep you going some long drives, like you a guided tour of the alleged abduction site.
Ooh, that'd be interesting.
He was even interviewed by Leonard.
I wonder if we could go visit that.
We could.
You should see if he was on Art Bell as well. I bet he was.
Possibly. He was even interviewed by Mr. Spock himself.
Leonard Nimoy interviewed him for
Weird. He had like a weird TV show shortly.
Strange things. Yeah. Unsolved
this
mysteries.
I guess never aired his interview with him, but Leonard Nimoy said something about the fact that he seemed very honest and believed what he said. And Leonard Nimoy thought maybe it could have been true.
Unsolved mysteries. Larry King from the waist down.
You know, let me ask Kathleen's sister to ask William Shatner
about Leonard Nimoy interview. Yeah, I'm sure the Shat Larry is all King. Over that. So
please ask William Shatner if Larry King is an alien from the waist down, please.
I figured you were asking William Shatner about Leonard Nimoy. I don't know if they got along all that well.
No, but William Shatner has to have been on Larry King at some point.
Oh, I'm sure at some point in time.
I mean, he's been everywhere,
including space.
With my friend's sister.
Yeah, sure.
What?
They could have left him in space.
I thought you were going to question her being my friend.
Oh, no.
Kathleen,
they can bring her back.
Friend.
But they
Kathleen
could,
loves
they could
me.
Have, they could have left William Shatner in space.
Oh, it's and it's just AI-generated images of him since he got back?
Well, maybe something happened. Who knows?
Saying like so. William Shatner is actually in space right now.
Could be.
And whatever is walking around wearing William Shatner suit.
It's a William Shatner suit.
It's an Egger suit.
It's an Egger suit.
That's my favorite part of the whole movie. It's like some sort of Egger suit. I lost my spot now. Oh, there we go. So anyways, this event, Travis Walton still maintains that it happened and it has become a major part of his identity. Now, UFO enthusiasts regard it as the most well-supported abduction story of modern history. They point to tree ring evidence from the area to support the claim. And they say that the crew members who witnessed the event still stand by their testimony. They like to bring up the so-called polygraph evidence, which they said proves the men were telling the truth. So, Jason, what do you think? Is this a real alien abduction? Was Travis Walton actually taken up into an alien spacecraft and probed?
That's a great question. I do not think it was a real Abe Lincoln abduction.
Abduction?
I do not think it was an Abe Lincoln abduction. Abduction. Either. I do not think it was an Abe Lincoln abduction either. I think maybe that there was like the, you know, when the guys left him, the next vehicle that came along was, you know, a Coors Light truck. So that's why it was shiny and silver. You know, right. That's why it was missing for 5 days, had beer, but, you know, wasn't like totally hungry or dehydrated, you know, just slightly dehydrated, and why you could easily pass polygraph tests.
Right. Well, maybe we should take a look at the evidence and theories for and against the incident after this break.
Oh, let's examine this break.
Okay.
And we're back.
Here we go.
Dun, dun, dun.
Jason, what's my very special superpower when it comes to this podcast?
Ruining something like the 1800s.
That is correct. And I'm going to ruin this. Let's start before the event even happened.
Ooh, okay.
It was well known that Travis and his family were like super into UFOs. Travis, his brother Dwayne, and their mother would often have conversations about what to do if they saw a UFO. They said they would immediately get directly underneath it in the hopes of getting sucked off. I mean, sucked up.
Wow. You know, it's funny because at first they would immediately get naked.
Take me. Easier to probe.
Look at this.
Let me bend over and show you how easy I am to probe.
Wow.
When Travis was missing, Dwayne repeatedly insisted that Travis was not even missing. He said, he knows where he's at, and I know where he's at.
So Travis was the one that got abducted. He
that
was
got
the
sucked
one,
off.
His,
I mean, up.
His family was the one that was obsessed with aliens.
Him and his family.
Oh,
yeah.
Him and his family. Yeah. We're obsessed with aliens. Was he the one that was driving the truck in the weird direction?
Mike Robert.
Mike
Rogers.
Was the one. Mike
Rogers was, right. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm seeing something here.
The Walton family was also famous for their practical jokes and pranks, and some of the neighboring families would recall
Bigfoot?
Being the target of multiple pranks.
Okay, multiple pranks.
Yeah.
Pranksters.
One of the people who worked for Mike Rogers said that Mike and Travis would have long discussions about how UFOs might fly. So let's talk about Mike. Mike had already asked for an extension of the Turkey Springs job. And it was looking like he wasn't going to be done by the new November 10th deadline. Missing that deadline would mean a $2,500 fine and possibly being blacklisted from bidding on federal forestry jobs. An inspector had come out to take a look at the job on October 16th and reported back that the job couldn't possibly be finished on time. On October 20th, Mike wrote to the Forestry Service officer overseeing this job and said, I cannot honestly say whether or not we will finish on time. However, we are working every day with as much manpower as I can hire. We will not stop work until the job is finished or until I am asked to stop. I have had considerable trouble keeping a full crew on the job. The area is very thick and with the guys have poor morale because of this. We will keep working and try hard. So
this is them thinning out the trees.
Yes.
So they're just basically clearing brush and...
Yeah. And small, scraggly trees. So, right. You know, this is part of fire management.
Sure.
So, you know, Mike is on the hook to get this job done. He's right. Already late. It's also getting into winter.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Especially up there.
Yeah. Snow is going to start.
It's called snowflake for a reason.
Well, actually, it is called snowflake because of one of the Mormon people that came out to Arizona. His name was something, something snow.
Well, that's a reason.
Yes.
I didn't say what reason, Shay. Jeez. Still a reason. Every word is made up.
Of this story, possibly. After Travis disappeared, Mike and Travis's brother, Dwayne, were interviewed by a Phoenix-based UFO interest group. Travis is still gone at this point. During that interview, neither man expressed concern for Travis's well-being. Mike told the interviewer about the Turkey Springs contract, saying, this contract we have is seriously behind schedule. In fact, Monday, the time is up. We haven't done any work on it since Wednesday because of this thing. Therefore, it won't be done. I hope they take that into account. Convenient, because Forestry Service contracts included an act of God clause that excused contractors who were delinquent due to unforeseeable circumstances.
Okay. Yeah, so this seems like act of God or act of... a lot of talking over some beers in the
right.
bar and kind of hatching out a plan. So this is a prank with purpose, basically.
Yes.
Mm.
So also, okay. On October 20th, 1975, so remember, this is just a couple weeks before the incident. The same day Mike wrote to that Forestry Service, there was something really interesting on TV. We've already established it was not Close Encounters of the Third Kind because it came out in 1977.
Or Larry King.
But...
I mean, it could have been Larry King.
NBC aired a primetime special, The UFO Incident, which was a made-for-TV movie starring James Earl Jones.
No way.
All about the Betty and Barney Hill incident.
Oh, wild. So this is the day that he wrote...
Yeah, same day.
Same day that he wrote...
This was aired on TV.
The...
So I'm assuming he wrote it before the evening primetime special, because primetime would have been in that, like, what, 7 o'clock time range? 6, 7
yeah.
o'clock when people
yeah,
were
six,
watching TV.
Yeah.
And remember, kids, back then, there was no on-demand. Something came on TV and you had to watch it then.
Yeah, otherwise you didn't see it.
Yes.
So 6, 7 o'clock, about the time yeah. mom goes to bed.
Right. So Betty and Barney Hill... were a couple that claimed that they were abducted by extraterrestrials in New Hampshire in 1961. This case also involved someone who is interested in UFOs and regression hypnosis therapy, and it is widely contested. So Betty was obsessed with UFOs as well. The details of her so-called abduction came from dreams that she had. She started having these crazy dreams, and so then she went to regression hypnosis therapy. Then at first, Barney was like, yeah, I think it was just a plane. And then as time went on, and he was probably harangued by his wife, he started saying, yeah, we were abducted. And interestingly, her description of the aliens matched aliens that were in Outer Limits episodes on TV.
The Outer Limits and Twilight Zone.
Right. So this film aired just 2 weeks prior to the Travis Walton incident. Many psychologists and skeptics argue that any person with a little imagination could become an instant celebrity if they alleged an abduction at this time.
Sweet. I don't know what I'm doing next weekend.
Author Philip J. Class investigated this case thoroughly.
You almost said Philip K. Dick, didn't you?
I did. Different author. Investigated this case thoroughly and had concluded that the entire incident was a hoax. So here are some of the details from his investigation. Like we mentioned before, the Walton family were obsessed with UFOs and would discuss alien abduction often. At one point prior to his disappearance, Travis told his mother not to worry if he were ever abducted by aliens because he knew he would return safe and sound. During the time he was missing, his mother called off the search for Travis multiple times, stating that she knew where he was, aboard a spacecraft, and then he would return just fine.
Okay.
His brother and the rest of the family didn't express much concern for Travis while he was missing,
again,
almost like they knew he was perfectly fine.
I think they just so did not like him that much. Like, eh, yeah, if he comes back, fine. If he doesn't, whatevs.
Let's also not forget the role that the National Enquirer had to play in this story.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
So for those of you who aren't familiar with this newspaper, the National Enquirer is a tabloid newspaper who is famous for its inflammatory and outrageous headlines. Now, a lot of people think of headlines like the Weekly World News, which is like Abraham Lincoln was a woman or Hillary Clinton adopts an alien baby. Or the Bat Boy, most famously. But the National Enquirer has more in common with, like, People magazine. Some of the headlines over the years include Dr. Phil, Raging Monster, which it probably is true. Or I think it would have been Dr. Phil, Total Garbage would be better. Michael Jackson, It Was Murder. Or Hillary Gaines, 103 pounds. Or Tori Spelling's House of Horror.
Well, wait, is it horror or
horrors.
Something else? Oh, okay. Because the other one also could be true. You never know.
Also, high quality articles like ranking the 50 best and worst beach bodies, which includes just lots of pictures of fat people on the beach.
Is that a best body or a worst?
Lately, the paper has been showing its true colors. You'll never see a negative headline about the Orange Menace. But you will see plenty of trash talk about his opponents, whomever they are. They're very happy to take an unflattering picture of Michelle Obama, for instance. And they're on a front page headline screaming about how she has gained 95 pounds, which is untrue. The paper had close personal ties to Trump and Michael Cohen and would squash any negative stories about Trump and even send his team advance notice of stories they were running that smear his opponents. So that's who the National Enquirer is.
Okay. So it's not Bat Boy. That's something
else. Weekly
That's
World
Weekly
News.
World News. Okay.
Yeah, Weekly World right. News is Man Gives Birth.
Yeah, Bat Boy for President.
Yes.
That sort of stuff. So.
Man Gives Birth. This is news.
Man Gives Birth.
Thank you.
I find it very interesting that you refer to the Weekly World News as the paper.
Anyway, back in the early 1970s, the National Enquirer was offering $100,000 for proof of extraterrestrials, as well as prizes for the best abduction stories. Almost immediately after his return, Travis was staying at a hotel in Scottsdale, a very expensive neighborhood, on the paper's dime, and the paper was paying for medical experts and polygraph tests for Travis and his team. This was happening within just a couple of days of his return, suggesting to me that the paper may have been in the loop the moment he went missing. Reports of alien abductions and UFO sightings were on the rise at this time, and this really sparked the public's interest and increased newspaper sales.
Of course. That's the whole point.
Exactly. But supporters of Travis's abduction story have some so-called evidence that they like to point to as proof.
Okay.
First, Travis himself has never wavered from his story. He claims that he isn't looking for publicity and acts demure and humble when asked about it.
Except for all the appearances at UFO right. conventions and writing a book, well, having a movie that he appeared in.
Right, exactly.
Except for all that. You know
except
what?
For all of that.
If I wasn't so humble, I'd be perfect.
He also refuses to be photographed looking up into the sky.
Oh, really? Oh, is that extra?
Second, they like to point to the polygraphs. The polygraphs given to the logging crew were administered by law enforcement and concluded that five of the men were being honest and that the sixth was inconclusive.
Right.
Well, the objective of that investigation was to determine whether the crew had killed or harmed Travis, not if Travis had been abducted by UFOs.
Sure.
They asked only four questions, three about violence and one asking if an unusual object was observed. Later on, Travis was given a polygraph test and the examiner determined that he was engaged in active deceit and was employing tactics to try to game the test, like holding his breath. But the National Enquirer misrepresented the polygraph results, saying that the witnesses were being truthful, and when in fact they were just being truthful about not killing Travis. Another bit of so-called evidence is what they call tree ring evidence. Now, a documentary on Discovery Plus called Alien Abduction, Travis Walton.
Did they cut Travis open and count the rings?
No, because he's still giving speaking engagements at McMiniman's UFO Festival. McMiniman's.
Hey, McMiniman's is great.
Yes.
We like McMiniman's.
We do.
Even if they do have some weird festivals. Actually, we probably like them because they have some
yes,
weird festivals.
Yes, thank you. We do. This documentary, Alien Abduction, Travis Walton, revisits the site and includes interviews with the crew and Travis's family.
Does it include where he stayed for the 5 days? Like tents, campsites?
We'll get to that.
Oh, okay. All right.
They present quote unquote evidence in the form of tree ring stumps surrounding the alleged abduction site. They claim that they exhibit unusual growth patterns in those tree rings. The spacing between the rings is spaced more widely on the side facing the clearing where the UFO was supposedly seen. So they're saying radiation from the UFO caused these abnormalities.
Okay. Doesn't that take like many years to grow a ring?
Well, if it was blasted with radiation, that could cause some damage to the cells of the tree, causing it to do something different.
Oh, accelerated growth. Gotcha. Cool.
Yeah. They attempt to draw parallels to the studies of tree growth following the Chernobyl nuclear disaster.
Okay. Fair enough.
However, there are several issues with this so-called evidence. First, the documentary doesn't actually give you any visuals supporting the evidence, just like one fuzzy, weird picture that doesn't even tell you what it is that you're supposed to be looking at.
Okay.
Only briefly discuss it, and there's no detailed analysis. This assumption that radiation causes increased tree growth is supposedly flawed based on some articles I read.
Yeah, it seems a little suspect.
I looked at
sus for our younger
sus.
Listeners.
Yes, thank you. I looked at several scholarly papers that I did not understand about the trees around Chernobyl, and they mostly...
You did not understand. Well, that's great.
It was
let's,
a lot
let's
of
get
science
your findings
talk.
About the stuff you didn't understand.
And they mostly discussed
blah,
how
blah,
trees...
Blah, science, science, science.
Some science hippie shit.
Science hippies.
They mostly discussed how the trees became twisted and stunted, with many dying, although it could take a long time for these trees to die. And there was no mention of unusual growth spurts. It killed trees. It stunted trees. It didn't make them become super trees.
So there wasn't, you know, they didn't become super Hulk trees.
Yeah, and, there were no you know. Super Hulk trees. It was okay. A lot of trees that had become really weirdly twisted in their growth.
Yeah, okay.
Radiation usually stunts tree growth.
Yeah, it's usually something we, you know, use to kill stuff like cancer cells right. and things like that. So
yeah, it's usually not good for life.
Typically, it's not right. the thing that you want to encounter.
There are also multiple...
Ask the people around Chernobyl.
Thank you. Or Fukushima.
Yeah.
Or what was the other one? 3 Mile Island.
3 Mile Island.
All the people with
Bikini
cancer.
Bikini Atoll. Mm-hmm. I think we, you know, there's a couple incidents that happened in mm-hmm. Japan at some point in time. That's atomic, though.
I know. You're going to have to explain the difference to me later.
Oh, no. We won't have to do that. It's okay. I'm just going to go, science, 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 Shay. There's
blah,
a difference.
Blah, blah, blah,
science,
blah, blah.
Science, science, science. I'm still very irritated that we didn't ask about UFOs near the Titan Missile Museum site.
I know. Damn it.
And yes, we are plugging the Titan Missile Museum. It's fantastic.
Yes, go to the Titan Missile Museum. So there are multiple alternative explanations for the abnormalities in the tree rings. So erosion affecting one side of the tree root system can cause this. Thinning of trees increases sunlight exposure that can cause the tree to grow differently. So okay. if it was shaded and then you thin trees and now it gets more sun, it's going to cause growth until trees around it grow up again.
Wasn't there a crew thinning trees around this area?
Oh, interesting.
Oh, interesting. If you pee on it for 5 days, the same tree. Or if,
yes.
If your tent is covering up side of the tree for
variations
5 days.
Variations in soil nutrients can cause it.
There you go.
Like if you were peeing on it for a while.
Lots of beer.
Natural solar flares also expose trees to radiation. And there are studies suggesting that that can have a long-term effect on tree ring formation.
Weirdos living in the forest exposing themselves to trees.
And the trees trying to climb away, grow away from it.
Not again. This guy. Classic Travis.
But Shay. You might argue. All of the witnesses have stuck to their stories since the event.
But Shay, I'm going to argue with you. All of the witnesses have stuck to their story about this event.
Well, not quite.
Bum, bum, bum.
In 2021, Mike Rogers, Travis's boss and brother-in-law.
Oh, that's not that long ago. And this happened a long time ago.
He posted on Facebook, of course, where he posts important information.
Yes, of course.
That he is no longer to be considered a witness to the supposed abduction, and also explained that Travis was trying to keep a remake of the movie from him.
Ooh, also here's a picture of my feet. Wait, sorry. I was just added in.
You gotta
make some money somehow, you know.
Not long after, Mike was recorded in a phone call with a producer, because wherever it was recorded from, it was one of these states where you do not have to tell people you're recording.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
And this is what Mike had to say. We were talking in the woods one day. We were talking about creating a UFO hoax, okay? I don't know how the UFO got there. But I remember when I was driving the truck and he jumped out, it was all deliberate. It was all a staged thing, okay? He ran up there and there was something about the UFO not being real, although it looked real.
This was Mike. This was the guy that was driving the truck that stuck to his story this entire time.
Until
so he's one of the main two players. He's not one of the other five NPCs.
Right.
Okay. Interesting.
He's the only other person whose name we know besides Dwayne.
Who's Dwayne?
Travis's brother.
Oh, that's right. Travis's brother.
The two men, Travis and Mike, later reconciled, and Mike issued a statement retracting his confession.
So they reconciled after 2021.
Yeah.
God, how old are these dudes? Goodness gracious.
Well, he was 22 in 1975. Math.
I'm not good at math either. He's at least 87.
So that means he was born in 1953.
Okay.
So that means he turned 70 this year. No. 2 years ago.
2 years ago. Okay.
Wow. What year is it?
Fast at math, not good at math.
A long, long
anyway,
last 5
they're,
years.
They're getting up there, yeah.
But then why do the other men stick to the story? Robert Schaefer, a writer for the Skeptical Inquirer and a founding member of the UFO subcommittee of the Committee for Skeptical Inquiry.
I wonder if the Skeptical Inquirer and the National Inquirer ever battle about.
Oh, that'd be
let
amazing.
Me rephrase. I wonder if the Skeptical Inquirer and the National Inquirer ever battle it out about the term inquirer.
Well, they're spelled differently.
I wonder if there's... Oh, there you go. They're spelled different. Are they on opposite sides of the spectrum?
Absolutely.
They shoot daggers at each other? Mm-hmm. Ooh.
So
do you think Skeptical Inquirer, name themselves that specifically to go at the National Inquirer?
Well, Skeptical Inquiry.
Oh, Skeptical Inquiry.
Did I say Inquirer?
You
I meant
said
to
Inquirer.
Say inquiry.
Okay. Skeptical Inquiry.
Which I think this is the organization that offers $500,000 if you can provide proof, testable proof of the paranormal. And nobody has done it yet.
It's what's his name? Randy.
The
Amazing Rando.
The Amazing Randy, yeah.
He did $1 million of his own
money. That was
money.
A part, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
Did you see that movie, Late Night with the Devil?
No, I haven't seen that.
It was interesting. I'd say it's worth seeing. It's not the best movie ever, but it is also very good.
Late Night with the Devil.
Yeah, and it has a...
Oh, so he knows my cat.
Basically.
Yeah.
Okay, so Robert Schaefer... this writer for this thing we were talking about. He has
Skeptical
a theory on,
inquiry. Okay.
on how it happened.
Okay.
So in the Sitgreaves Forest, there's a 70-foot tall Forest Service fire lookout called Gentry Tower. It's not far off of Rim Road. Typically, the crew left before dark and traveled back to the town of, I spelled it wrong, I spelled it Heaver, and I think it's Heater or something like that. doesn't matter. back to the little town via Black Canyon Road. But that day was different. Not only did Travis disappear for several hours, saying he was going to sleep off a hangover in the truck, but their boss, Mike Rogers, also disappeared for 2 hours during the day. Then he kept them past dark, which they never did. And instead of going back via Black Canyon, the usual route, they drove up Rim Road, which passes Gentry Tower. The tower is equipped with a generator and a massive spotlight. So Schaefer suggests that Travis had an accomplice, perhaps his brother Dwayne, in the tower who could illuminate the spotlight in the clearing when the truck was approaching it. This bright light in the dark could be interpreted as a UFO.
I mean, that's making total sense.
Well, and when people point out that temperatures get down to sub-freezing at night and Travis couldn't survive in the woods, well, the lookout tower had a 200-square-foot living area and a generator.
Yeah, those lookout towers are, for those of you who don't know, in Arizona, those lookout towers are a thing just because of the occurrence of wildfires and such like that. And you can actually track them via the Forest Service. You can go and see very, very old ones as well that are literally just like ladders up a tree. There's lots of overlanding and off-roading where you can go and see these things, and they are... in some cases, still accessible.
Yeah, there's one in Enumclaw, Washington that I hiked to.
Yep.
An old fire service. So he could have stayed in that
tower. Easy. I would too.
Yeah.
And so he could have also shown a spotlight or had somebody shown a spotlight.
Yeah, like I was saying, like his brother was really into this, so he could have had his brother up there and they're like, we're going to do this thing. Dwayne.
Damn it, Dwayne.
So, and they also say that when Mike came back with investigators to search for him, that he took them to a completely different location, closer to the Turkey Springs job, not to where the Gentry Tower is.
Okay, so not to where the actual incident supposedly happened.
Right.
So he's like, hey, yeah, I know
that way they wouldn't
be
like, oh, let's go look in the tower.
Yeah. I lost my keys in the bedroom, but let's look downstairs in the living room for them. Gotcha. All right.
My wife is missing. She couldn't possibly be in the trunk of my car. Don't bother looking there. But supporters of the story claim that the continued reliability of the witnesses and their psychological trauma over the years point to something unusual having happened.
But they could have not known.
Right.
Like it could have been literally between three dudes.
Right. Mike, Travis, and whoever else.
Dwayne.
One other. Dwayne. If that is your name.
If that is your real name, Dwayne.
You know, all these other, these things are... It's hard for me to dismiss these things. So first, Travis and his family were obsessed with UFOs.
Sure.
The family didn't seem concerned at all that Travis was missing. Travis was known to discuss UFOs with Mike, and Mike was looking at fines and possibly losing the ability to bid on Forest Service jobs if he did not get this job done on time.
Right. And so the act of God clause comes into play.
Exactly.
Act of spotlight and some smoke and some weird stuff happening.
Yeah.
So yeah. Speakers and in the woods, whatever.
This is 1975. It was a hotbed of UFO interest.
Oh, yeah.
The Betty and Barney Hill movie had just aired.
Sure.
And this was almost like exactly like, oh, bright light, beam of light, you know. And even though Mike and Travis claim they didn't financially benefit from this, Travis has made it a huge part of his life. He got a book and got paid for the movie rights to that book. And he does appearances and... podcasts and like he does stuff that makes money off of it.
All right. Well, I mean, if you're going from like lowly forest clearer to like, oh, hey, now I'm kind of a celebrity.
Yeah.
So,
and you're getting attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's not forget that just attention is enough for people to do things like this.
I mean, that's part of the reason why people do pranks like that in general is just kind of get that attention.
Yeah.
So even if they are unknown for it, in this particular case, he could be known for it.
Yeah. And we don't know if Travis gave Mike money for this. You know, could be.
Mike could have given Travis money for this because it could have extended his contract.
Right. And then the other guys could just be victims because they all suffered from the fallout from this.
Wait, there's fallout?
Not like radioactive fallout.
Okay.
No, man. I'm saying like, you know, people bugging them over the years and then people not believing them. And
oh, yeah. I mean, if your names, I mean, it's probably a good thing that we don't know their names.
Right.
But I'm sure their names in that small community, some of these small towns are very small communities. You know, we just went to Tombstone. Tombstone's really well known, but there's only 4,000 people in Tombstone.
Right.
So your name is going to get around no matter what.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you can't live there anymore. You can't get work anymore because people think you're a nut job or they're constantly asking about the stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So those guys are just, now victims. And if they believed that this actually happened, then sure, that could be traumatic.
Or so, they could just be like, this is what I saw.
Right. You know. And people not believing them, yeah. That's hard. That sucks. I mean,
at the end of the day, what did they saw? They saw some dude fall off a truck. There was a bright light. All of a sudden, that dude was gone, and they went into town. They looked for him, couldn't find him, and then went
into
town.
He ran out of the truck to the bright light.
Right. Yeah,
and exactly. Then he flew backwards.
Yeah. That's the one thing I don't understand. Yeah. If they all said he flew backwards, how did that happen?
Human memory is very fallible, though. If you told people... If he just fell down or jumped backwards, you could tell them enough times. Oh my God, he flew back. He flew back.
He could have just fallen over backwards into a ditch and then be like, oh, he disappeared.
Yeah. 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 So,
hey, don't think about a pink elephant. What's the first thing you think of? Pink elephant.
It's my favorite car wash.
Ooh, that's true.
So maybe something did happen to Travis out there.
Don't think about the pink elephant car wash. Crap. Now that's all I can think about. So something did happen to Travis out there is what you said.
Well, I'm saying maybe something did.
Sure.
So maybe we're talking about this as the Mogollon Rim. Weird stuff happens out there all the time. Mostly probably turpentine and laudanum related, but there's been tales of otherworldly things out there for decades to centuries, right?
Well, I mean, to speak of that, your latest episode about the Red Ghost of Arizona, super weird things that are happening. And then it turned out to be a super weird thing that happened. It just wasn't supernatural.
Right.
It was super weird, not supernatural.
And think about the legends that grew up about that too. People were saying there was a 30-foot ghost that they saw kill and eat a grizzly bear, or that it was walking on thin air and over the desert and then disappeared. You know, but it turned out to be a real thing that was not supernatural, but people built these supernatural stories around it.
Sure. And I mean, for those of you who don't know, Arizona is weird. Weird things do happen out in the desert. There is, you know, they'll have flash floods that'll be 10 miles away from where you're at, and all of a sudden you can just get water rolling through a stream that was dry 3 minutes ago. You get weird weather. You get lightning.
Yeah, you get weird electrical storms because it's really dry.
Yep. And then you get sinkholes and stuff out in the middle of the desert that if you get into and it rains, the only way you're getting out is from swimming out, you know.
And let's not forget about mirages. Mirages in the desert are a real thing.
Sure. And if you slide into these things and you, like these things, like sometimes if you slide into them, you are praying for rain because that's the only way you're getting out unless somebody helps you. I mean, this is... Like the desert can be a treacherous and dangerous place. Everything on the ground wants to damage you or kill you. Like that's the way it goes.
Remember, it's a carpet of scorpions as far as the eye can see.
But this is up in the forest where it's a little softer and that sort of thing. I mean, this
less scorpions.
There's definitely less, but this is also close to where like they had petrified forest and there's other things that happen. This is meteor craters not too far away. I mean, not too far as in, you know, it's within a 2-hour drive.
Well, but, that's close according to Jody.
Yeah. So this is, I mean, this is some of the things that happen up there. Yeah. But 2-hour drive, of course. Yeah. Close according to Jody. sorry, Jody. But yeah, this is one of those things where, you know, things even in the woods of Arizona, the upper woods of Arizona, I've camped out in 2 feet, 3 feet of snow before up in upper Arizona. Easy.
Yeah.
Like this is something that happens. It can get strange out there. There's definitely strange things. So, but that being said.
Well, I mean, I'm not sold this was an alien abduction because as Carl Sagan, the late great Carl Sagan said, extraordinary claims require
extraordinary evidence.
And correct. Eyewitness testimony seems to be the strongest evidence here. Right.
Sure. Yep.
And I don't, for one, don't trust human memory.
Absolutely.
It's incredibly easy to manipulate. Look at Michelle remembers.
And literally us remembering is us remembering the last time we remembered something.
Right.
So, you know, like that's...
Human perception is really fallible.
Yeah, absolutely.
You cannot always believe... That is just information coming in. Your brain has to interpret it. And if there is something...
Dude, and it's also like you worked a longer than normal day.
It's dark.
You're tired. It's dark on the way back, which, why did they leave when it's dark? Like, that gets treacherous up in the woods as well.
Yeah.
I mean, and there's bears. There's all kinds of stuff up in that area.
Mogollon monsters up there.
Mogollon monsters. There's crazy goat men.
There's men having sex with goats up there. You don't want to see that.
Oh, that's give me 3 Mogollon monsters.
Zeke riding, having sex with a goat.
Riding the red ghost camel before I want to see Zeke. Sorry, Zeke, but yeah.
Yeah, and also I don't have a strong trust in human honesty.
No, especially, I mean, these people were, you know, needing the work. They were needing the thing. They're going to do, you know, yep, that's what we saw. Can we go back to work?
And maybe they didn't expect it to get so big.
Absolutely.
You know, yeah, this was supposed weird. To
like
be...
he jumped out, ran over this big light, and he showed up 5 days later. Who knows? Maybe he was drunk.
Right.
So he was sleeping off a hangover, supposedly. So, you know, what if, you know, a little bit of the hair of the dog that bit you to try and help out the hangover, and he got drunk again and ran off the truck and ran out in the middle of nowhere, you know, fell, hit his head, woke up, took him 5 days to walk back into town. And
yeah,
you know,
yeah, who knows? But I just, for me, I need more than that. So it's also tough for me to believe that sure. aliens somewhere have developed faster than light technology to travel the millions or billions of miles to get here just to pick up some weirdo in the woods and probe him.
Well, maybe they're not aliens, Shay. Maybe they're us from the future coming back, seeing how primitive pooping works. So maybe they've developed very highly attuned and advanced anuses, and they can poop really well.
Like in future Star Trek, they just beam the poops out of you.
Oh, that's right. Oh, God, how nice would that be?
I mean, but for why? But for why would aliens come back and pick you up? That's the thing. But for why, Jason?
Well, maybe they really liked him. Maybe they picked him because he was obsessed. They're like, oh yeah, this dude's into us.
Let's see what the inside Let's of his butt out. Looks yeah. like.
You know, I mean, you're not going to go on a date with somebody, you know, second date with somebody that you're like, oh, they're not really into me. But you're going to be like, oh yeah, that person's into me. Let's hang out.
Well,
aboard my spacecraft.
A wise man named Douglas Adams once said, space is big. You just won't believe how vastly, hugely, mind-bogglingly big it is.
It is. That's
so Shay,
call it space.
Me, I remain skeptical about this story. I like to keep an open mind, but not so open that my brains fall out.
Fair enough.
And on this one, I'm saying I believe it was a hoax. How about you?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting that in 2021, the other dude,
Mike
came out and was like, hey, he just jumped out of the truck.
We set this up as a hoax.
Yeah. He basically was like, yeah, this is something going on. You know, and it's kind of shitty of him not to give the other people closure or any of that stuff that entire time, you know, and that stuff weighs on you, you know, after years and years. So I think maybe it was like, yeah, I'm getting old. You know, what do I care anymore?
Well, I think it was, if Travis was working on a deal for a remake of the movie and not cutting Mike in.
Right.
Then he's like, well, screw you. Travis probably came back and said like, all right, I'll cut you in if you retract your statement.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be good for the movie if he didn't do this. But we haven't heard anything in the movie. That's 4 years ago.
Why would they remake that movie? It was not a great movie in the first place.
Right. But why would they? I mean, we haven't heard anything about that movie. So who knows? But maybe it was because of this, you know, thing. It kind of got shot down. Or
we can't say this is the most true abduction story ever when one of the main players said it was a hoax.
Yeah. You know, I'm much more likely to believe in Close Encounters of the Third Kind than I am this particular nonsense. And that was a movie by Steven Spielberg. And I believe it actually
exists.
And
there were mashed potatoes in it.
And there was mashed potatoes in it, yes. Yeah, that's something I'm much more likely to believe exists is that movie.
Yeah.
So, So then this particular abduction incident. So, I mean, weird things happen. Like your Red Ghost of Arizona story is a fantastic example of that. Weird things, but that was finally explained, at least to some extent. There is still some mystery in that.
The mystery
in this one is very much, you know, how he pulled this off, what he did.
Yeah.
You know, and it would be very easy at that point in time. Yeah, you could probably hook up a spotlight at that tower if there wasn't already one up there.
Mm-hmm.
You could probably hook up a spotlight at that tower and do a spotlight. Yeah. You know, the him being pulled backwards and the blue beam out of the white light and seeing something silver is, you know, I can't really explain that. So I don't know.
But maybe, again, if you told the people long enough times that they saw it, eventually they would remember seeing it.
Yeah. But there's, I mean, you never know what it could have been. So at that point in time, like you just don't know.
Yeah.
But for my mind, the way the rest of his family acted and the way everybody else acted was like, oh yeah, whatever, he'll show up in a few days. I mean, he could have showed up in 3 days and been like, oh, I was abducted for 3 days. He could have showed up in 2 weeks and people would have been like, oh, now we really do need to get you a medical examiner. My thing is, why didn't the sheriff, if the sheriff was alerted the first point, why didn't he come out? It was like, hey, we've had a missing persons thing. and this person has just showed up, is it like, okay, cool, we don't have to worry about it and we'll get to him when we can? Or was it, it seems like he should have come out a little bit sooner if the operator showed him. So I'm wondering if even that phone call was something that was made up.
Yeah.
Like if he didn't show up at the ranch at his, you know, if he didn't make his way to his family's ranch and just hang out there for a couple days. You know,
yeah, I mean, so, yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Anyways.
So that to me is, you know, the whole thing's a little suspect. And the fact that he was down in Scottsdale 2 days later,
I know.
You know, with the National Enquirer fronting the bill for everything, you know, and this is, you know, if it were me, I'd be like, I need to figure out what happened, what's going on with me.
I'd want to be in the hospital.
Yeah. I'm like, can you
being
please
like,
examine?
What did they do to me?
Did they ever ask what happened to the mark on his inner elbow?
I don't know. So, I don't know. It was just mentioned in a couple of the stories. So who
knows? I mean, that could have been when he got, you know, he fell backwards or got pulled backwards. It could have been a little thing.
Or he could have also been a drug addict.
Yeah, fair enough.
Who knows? So. Anyways, well, that is the Travis Walton incident.
Excellent.
I did want to watch Fire in the Sky to prepare for this, but I was not willing to pay $3.79 to watch it. So if any of you have a copy of Fire in the Sky, please go watch it.
please get your $2 out of it because that's probably just what
it's
worth.
Yes, we did look in a lot of used bookstores and whatnot for it, but I was not paying $13 for the DVD. So anyways, I have some vague remembrances of it from a teenager and
watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind instead.
Yes, that's a much
more
movie.
Entertaining.
Yeah. Or just watch all the X-Files. Anyway, hey, do you have a topic that I can ruin for you?
Do I?
Anybody.
Oh, I'm sure I have plenty of topics you can
listeners, you can write into me at shay@rainydayrabbitholes.com and let me know what I can ruin next. And I want to thank my big brother, Jason, for being on this podcast with me. It was
a lot
of fun.
You're very welcome. So,
thanks for all the
beers.
Thanks
for visiting me in Arizona.
We've had a fun time. So,
yeah. Seen lots of UFO murals in Tucson.
We did.
So go check those out. Those are definitely existing.
Yes.
We have proof
that there are UFO murals in Tucson.
There are UFO murals in Tucson.
And also we have merch. So check out rainydayrabbitholes.com for merch and also links to stuff like social media and more. And thank you to all of our listeners and especially our Patreon supporters for continuing to support us. If you like the show, please share it with a friend and
see you down the rabbit hole.
We do it perfectly when we're together.
I know. It's funny.
We got to look
works.
At each other during.
Oh, gosh.
Care Talk with Laura Packard is a podcast covering healthcare in America from a progressive perspective. Our healthcare system is broken, and we all know insurance companies are out of control. If you don't have health insurance or don't understand the differences between insurance plans or have surprise medical bills, out-of-control prescription drug costs, or can't get the care you need, listen to Care Talk with Laura Packard weekly on Tuesdays. What's going to happen to your healthcare under the Trump administration? From prescription drug prices to health insurance costs, from healthcare for seniors and people with disabilities to reproductive care, from care for veterans to public health, including vaccinations. Healthcare experts answer your questions every week, and they go in-depth on Medicare, Medicaid, the Affordable Care Act, private insurance, and more. Go to healthcarevoices.org/caretalk or search for Care Talk with Laura Packard on your favorite podcast app to listen today.